The talk is called Strength, Courage, and Fierce Compassion on the Spiritual Path. And this is part of a series on emotional wisdom, working wisely with our emotional states, wisely and kindly. And we focused on fear, we focused on anger, and we'll do more. We're going to work with anger tonight, and with these qualities of anger, strength, and fierce compassion that are really constructive, really helpful. So I will unpack that, and we, in a couple of classes we've already done on anger, we've explored the harmful aspects of anger and the actual beneficial aspects of anger. And so I just want to, a lot of you actually weren't here for those two, so we'll just briefly kind of summarize those and then move on to tonight's topic. So anger, pro and con. Clearly anger, you know, as a communication style is often not helpful. Anger, when it's connected with judgment of oneself or others, I think we would all agree it's not helpful. Anger as attachment, you know, you could say that one of the roots of anger is attachment to view. And that kind of anger of attachment to view is really the root of all violence. All violence comes from the belief that your ideas are right and, you know, other ideas are wrong, which is not really understanding thought in general, because thought can never be absolutely right. We're always symbolizing reality. Thoughts can't be reality. We can never capture reality with our thoughts. But we can sort of approximate something. But so that's, you know, the negative sides of anger, the harmful sides. The positive, constructive sides are, you alluded to, you know, it can motivate us. It can actually mobilize us to take action and give us courage. It can tell us something. If we stuff our anger, it's actually, that's not helpful, because inside anger is usually information for us about something we need, or a boundary maybe that's been crossed. And if we stuff our anger, we really, really can lose a lot of self-worth and, what's the word, it just escaped me, self-knowledge. So the mindfulness path is the middle path in working with anger. We fully allow it, but we get that it's harmful. Anger is harmful as a communication style. We say mean, judgmental, oversimplified things when we're angry. And even just our tone, people will have an emotional reaction from our tone, even without the word. Just the tone of anger can have a negative impact on people. So as a mobilizing force, as a force that gives courage, as something that tells you about your needs, anger can be very constructive. With the mindfulness path, we'll get all that, because we're going to allow the anger. But just as suppressing the anger is a way to try to get rid of it, acting it out is another way of trying to get rid of it. We don't like the feeling of anger, so we bite someone's head off. So that's just kind of a summary of what we've explored already. So now to then take this function of anger, of strength, protection, fierce compassion, that actually there's a real role, a positive role for anger to play. And the way I look at anger in terms of harmful, beneficial, is basically when does it cause disconnection and when does it create connection. And an anger that tells us about our boundaries, and then we act assertively, assertion doesn't have aggression, we act assertively to take care of our boundaries, that actually facilitates connection. It's very ironic that there are times when we get our boundaries right that really helps us relate properly to somebody, connect well. But when our boundaries are not clear and they're crossed, it's very hard to relate to somebody that we feel is crossing our boundaries. So with this middle path of working with anger, of neither suppressing it to get rid of it or acting it out to get rid of it, but rather being mindful. We've talked a lot about how to actually be mindful of anger, to sit with the prickliness, the heat, the tension, the really dark thoughts, self-righteous thoughts. When we sit with that with mindfulness, then we actually learn some other qualities in anger. And one of the qualities in anger is strength. And strength, we could say very simply, is anger, the energy of anger without the story of anger. So we can actually find strength sometimes when we realize we're angry, but we have such a story about the other person, and it just fuels our anger. And that's actually a weak kind of anger. That's sort of victim-y kind of anger. But if we can let go of the story, because we truly don't know unless we ask and find out what another person is actually doing with their actions. So because we don't know, we can let go and actually be with the qualities, the energy inside anger. And that energy is strength. So I'm going to say more about that. But just to kind of segue into the concept of protection. Protection is a wholesome quality, a necessary quality in life. And I want to really use carefully the word protection and distinguish it from defensiveness. Defensiveness is using anger in such a way to deny or avoid what's actually happening inside. Protection is actually aware that there's something inside that needs care and that needs protection, and we're actually connected to it. So a typical example of defensiveness is you just really are judgmental because someone did such and such to you, and you just think they're such a blah, 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 you know? And with mindfulness, though, if you're with it long enough, then you realize, oh, that's a defensive anger. I am judging them so harshly because I don't want to feel what's inside in response to them. It could be hurt feelings. It could be powerlessness. It can be a lot of things that we might not want to admit. That's a defensive anger. We're just pounding the judging of someone else really as an avoidance of what's inside. We don't want to admit that we're hurt or scared or powerless. My partner, Lisa, when she first started doing mindfulness, she said, well, the more I meditate, the fewer jerks there are in the world and the more hurt feelings I have. Yeah. That's just really that simple. So do we get that? That's when anger is defensive. We like judging somebody because then we don't have to focus on how we feel. Anger that's protective is different. Anger that's protective is we're in a situation, there's something vulnerable inside of us, and that's we don't feel their safety. So we need to be protective of the vulnerability. We know we're vulnerable. We're in touch. So these are two really different but similar ways that anger manifests. So just to talk about protection. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the concept of protection is actually very important. Padmasambhava was, as legend goes, was a saint in India, a very awake dude. And he went to Tibet in the 8th century, and he brought Buddhism to Tibet from India across the Himalayas. And Tibet, as the legend goes, was a place that was full of demons. And when he came to to Tibet, he tamed the demons with Dharma. He basically taught the demons Dharma. And these demons were pacified from being harmful demons to protector deities. And these demons, when linked with the love and wisdom of Dharma, became protection, strength, fierce compassion. And what are they protecting protectors of? They're basically protecting the mind from the shenanigans of ego. Awakened mind, awakening needs protecting. And ego, you know, this can be a problematic word. It's not a thing. It's just basically an activity. It's the activity that's built into us. As much as there's something in us that thirsts to be awake and peaceful and loving and connected, there's something in us that really doesn't. And ego, we could say, is the activity that, for no reason other than perpetuating the illusion of its own existence, blocks us from being mindful. The ego in us, whatever that is terrified. We hear about no self, and it's scary to us. We think something in us is going to be destroyed. And so then we grab anything at all. It doesn't matter how suffering it is. If I'm suffering, I'm still here. If I have a problem, I'm still here. If I'm scared, I'm still here. We have this in us. But it's really just, and we don't have to pathologize it or get too worked up about it. It's just everything in us that gets in the way of being mindful. So it's our resistance, unconscious, to meditation. It can be our laziness. We know we want to practice, but we just don't quite get around to it. We can rationalize it. Oh, we don't have time. Life is too busy, you know. Right. We should all spend our whole lives enslaved to our to-do list, so that by the end, it'll finally be done. But then we just die, and it's never done. Tibetans say, you know, the only way to finish your to-do list is just put it down. It'll never all get done. So we need protection from this inside of us. Yes, something in us deeply wants to awaken, and something in us deeply does not. And so in the Tibetan iconography, this is what protector spirits look like. I'll pass these around. These are the demons that Padmasambhava pacified into protectors. And they are fierce, as you see them. They are, their hair is on fire. They've got, like, incredibly big fangs. And they're usually standing on tops of a corpse. Sometimes they have severed heads. It's very gory. And this is just the severed head of ego. And this is fierce compassion. This is not coming. The quality of protection is not coming out of an egoic place. It's actually coming from compassion. We realize, you know, ego has run the show for long enough. And life is short. It could end any time. This is for keeps. And sometimes fierceness is needed in working with our minds. here's a poem called Shoulders by Naomi Shihab Nye that just speaks to the need for protection. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south, because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him. No car drive too near to his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile, handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling. We need, with our own minds and with each other, we need the parental protection of a father looking both ways. Carrying the boy and his dreams on his shoulders, that's us, you know. This kind of little fragile desire in us, you know, for greater peace, more love, more happiness, needs protecting. And occasionally, rarely, but sometimes, we need some fierceness, motivated by compassion. So I will say more about that. I'll just stop here and invite your input, and then we'll take a break.
You were talking about ego, and I think I'm at a time in my life when I'm trying to get clear on what ego is.
Yeah.
And I feel like anything that we have, you know, we're working with as an individual or collectively has purpose. So I often get lost on what the purpose of the ego is, because it, yeah, like you said, it's kind of it's thought of as a negative entity of some kind. But one definition that I heard recently was that it's the tool that we have to recognize ourselves as separate from, you know, the consciousness connection.
Mm-hmm.
That we have our individuality or our uniqueness, but ego holds so tightly in such a way to make it almost seem the opposite of our true self and our connection to our consciousness.
Yes, yes, yeah? Right. So maybe, just to summarize, maybe a positive function of ego is that we see our individuality, our uniqueness, and that seems healthy, but then it goes overboard into this, like, big reaction.
So maybe balancing.
Yeah. Yeah, we could say maybe ego is just an extreme version, of the truth of our individuality and our uniqueness. We are all one, but that doesn't mean we're all the same. We are different, unique, individuated within our connection. So.
And is that the fierce compassion that would step in, or is that not, that's not connected to ego?
Fierce compassion is non-egoic. It would be a response that is motivated from love and compassion. It's not attached to results. It's not attached to views. It's saying enough is enough. Bam. But
it doesn't seem to be attached to truth.
Yeah, you could say it's attached to truth. It's attached to awakening. I mean, classically, it's the thing that we sometimes need in service of our meditative path. And we're going to do an experiential, actually, which the Buddha has a phrase, crush mind with mind, which is very surprising to hear in meditative circles. But it actually, there might be rarely a time when we just need to say to ourselves, enough is enough. I've had that fear, I've had that shame, I've had that judgment 12,046 times And I don't want it the 47th. So enough. Wham. To our mind. It's clear seeing. It's seeing what's needed, and it's coming from love.
It's such an edge, though, between that and bypassing.
Yeah.
You know, because what you're saying, it's not bypassing.
Yes.
It's understanding the quality of what's happened, and
yes.
then having
yes.
The larger awareness be in relationality with that.
Yes.
Whereas bypassing is, let's get here.
And bypassing is suppressing, mm-hmm. therefore not seeing clearly.
Yeah.
Right?
But
And by the way, this is in the instructions I'll give you later. There's four steps you do in meditation before you ever use the fierce compassion one. So it's when all other options have been exhausted. Please.
I had a lot of anger in my younger years.
Yeah.
So specifically about the time I was 35. I didn't want that anymore. I don't need it. Except when people get angry at me, I immediately respond to anger with anger.
Yeah.
How can I control that?
So the question just is, I'm really good with not being angry until someone gets angry at me, and then whammo, I get angry back. How do I control that? It's the sacred pause of mindfulness. It's to know that you're angry, but to know that's... So in other words, use your own anger, and you need to set the intention for this as a mindfulness bell. Okay. Meditation session has begun for that 20 seconds. Oh, I want to really feel this. Oh, what's it like to be angry? Prickly, tight, hot, and the thoughts are so really, in anger, the thoughts are very delicious because they're basically a version of, I'm so right, you're so wrong, right? And we love that. Let's be real. That's very pleasant.
Well, the last time that this happened, somebody said something to me, and I responded with a lot of anger. Inside, I didn't express it. I walked off, but I was so uptight with anger.
Yeah.
And she could see that I was angry.
Yes. So a skillful way, you could just name it, because... You know, there's something when someone's angry and they're not in touch with it, but we can see it, it's very confusing. So one skillful way to work with anger when you're angry is to say, I'm very angry. There's no harm in that. I think now is not the best time for me to open my mouth. I need to take a break. But, you know, whatever, you know, you want to say, you know, this is your concern is important to me or whatever, you know, so the person doesn't feel cut off. I want to address this, but I know for me right now this is not the best time to open my mouth. And then you're being real. And it's fine, right? Is it harmful to say I'm really angry? Is that harmful?
No.
There's nothing negative you're saying to somebody. Okay, so... Now, moving from protection on to strength. Strength is what we use for protection. it's the father carrying the child, protecting the child. It's the father, the mother, you know, taking care of our vulnerability, that which is fragile, precious, handle with care. None of us are labeled that way, but we are. So, and the Diamond Heart tradition, founded by Almas, and what's his other name?
Oh,
I'm blanking.
Yeah, you heard it.
Habib or something.
Oh yeah, Hamid Ali. Sorry, that's his Persian name, and Almas is his spiritual name, his writer's name, but. In the Diamond Heart tradition, they talk about strength as an intrinsic quality of the awakened heart. And if you think about it, one of the strongest things you can be is free of shame. There's a lot of power in that, right? Shame is very weakening, can be. It isn't always. Sometimes shame is just information. And the positive aspect of shame, it's an emotion that is designed to tell us when we're outside the group norm. So that's just information. Doesn't mean we're bad. Just means here's the group, and I'm standing over here. I'm an outlier. Oh, huh. Yeah, and I'm good with that. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just an outlier. No shame there, right? Just information. Toxic shame is when we just feel bad about ourselves. We're not okay because we're outside the group. That's really different. So strength is the absence of shame. That's a big one. It's the feeling of I can. There's capacity, ability. And strength is free of attachment to view, which anger is usually pretty invested in attachment to view. We just keep getting Maytagged. We go around and around by how right we are and how wrong they are.
Maytagged.
That's anger, free of strength. That's a weak kind of anger. Strong anger is just like, no, this is not okay. There's not attachment to view. You just see clearly there's harm being done. And that harm actually causes you pain and compassion. And if you decide to act, then that's the strength that you're using. And this strength is, it's in the present moment. It's not lost. A judgment is essentially taking the ever-changing flux of reality, taking a snapshot of it, and it's a very negative snapshot, and then parking it on the shelf, and there it forever sits. That person is such a blah, blah, blah. You're totally disconnected, you know. They're so self-centered. You know, and then the next moment they turn around and they do something extremely kind to somebody. But because you have this preconception, you don't even notice it. That's not strength. That's just anger attached to view. And the other thing about strength is it's aligned with what really matters. It's aligned with our deepest purpose. There's a great story about the Dalai Lama that I just really like. This, he was being interviewed, and you know, this person asked him, "So, you know, you speak publicly all the time. Do you get nervous speaking?" And the Dalai Lama kind of laughed. He said, "Occasionally, you know." But he said, "You know, people think all kinds of things about me." Chinese say I'm a monk in wolf in monk's robes. The Tibetans think I'm a living god. Either way, I don't care. My sincere motivation protects me. That's deep. He is serving. He wants to help. He's got this altruistic motive. And that's his protection. He doesn't care what other people think of him. He just cares about others. That's strength. So you know, that's my little tagline for myself sometimes. Replace that energy of wondering what someone is thinking about you. Care about others, not about what others think of you. That's strength. Your good human heart, when you feel yourself caring, you don't care what other people think. That's strong. So this is what Amos says about this intrinsic quality of strength. We have observed that when a person is engaged in the process of disengaging from the superego, that's the hypercritical part of ourselves that Freud, you know, came up with that term, superego, she is strengthened and endowed with more energy. One is strengthened not only by re-owning one's anger, but also, and more fundamentally, by integrating the essential aspect of strength, which is the energetic basis of the emotion of anger. So again, strength is the energy. Anger is what takes that energy and gets it confused by being attached to views and judgments. But it's an intrinsic quality. So the superego is the judgment. We can say that's the unhealthy anger. That's the really harsh inner critic is the superego. So when we disengage from the superego, the inner critic, we find strength apart from all the anger. So again, essentially, strength is anger without story or attachment. And much of that strength is co-opted in this very weak form of anger of the inner critic. Inner critic weakens us, doesn't it? It robs us of our strength. It robs us of that quality of feeling good about oneself, that quality of caring about others, not caring what others think of you. So let's do a little experiential where we can actually contact strength. So I'm just borrowing this from a book called Soul Without Shame, which is just a whole book on working through self-judgment and shame. So this will be, 5 minutes or so. If you could just close your eyes and before I guide you in the excerpt from Soul Without Shame, let's do one thing just to feel the vitality and aliveness of our body. So if you could take a couple fingers and put them up against your Adam's apple and find your pulse. Find just that little groove between the larynx and your neck muscles where you can really feel the strength of your pulse. Feel how strong this heart is. We think, we're just sitting here almost inert with this gift of life, but we're not inert at all. Feel this pulse. Feel how strong that heart is beating. Giving each of us gift of life 60, 70, 80 times a minute, just pounding away. Physically feeling the pulse against your fingers. So now I'll read this. You're a living organism, full of pulsating blood and vital energy. Notice whether or not that feels true. Take 3 deep breaths, and with each, imagine you are exhaling with intensity out your eyes. Now, if you would, move your shoulders around and spread your fingers wide and then make fists. Let's all do this 3 times, moving the shoulders around, really stretching out the fingers and making a fist and feeling your arm in the fist. And then repeat 3 times. Don't worry if you don't feel strength or aliveness. Often we must start by feeling the lack of a quality before we can feel the quality itself. Simply allow whatever is there without reaction or judgment. Just let go now. And be aware of sensation in your body. How do the arms feel, shoulders, heart center, throat? Okay. So that's just kind of a physical way to access strength. In my work with clients, especially with depression, which is a kind of deadness, a kind of shutdown, just the simple thing of feeling your pulse can really, even in a depressed mood, where a person is just like, the heart is just as strong and vital. And it can really help a person just feel, oh, right, this body is not just inert sitting here. This body is vital, alive, energetic. So when you're feeling depressed, that could be something to try. See if that helps. So now I want to kind of go to a second experiential. And this is going to use the Buddha's advice to crush mind with mind. So he has a sutta on five ways of working with unhelpful thoughts. And only when you've exhausted all possibilities would you maybe consider using some fierce compassion, which is to crush mind with mind. So you want to first, with an unhelpful thought, just switch. This is the Buddha's recommendation. And think of something skillful, something wholesome, something helpful. When I used to play a lot of soccer, you know, and I would find myself just focusing on all my mistakes, I just made a little rule with myself. Okay, for every time I rehash a mistake, I have to think of six positive things that I did. That's kind of what the Buddha is talking about. The second strategy would be you could think about the drawbacks of being in that state. So again, the drawbacks of being so critical, focusing on the negative. Right? Like, how does that help me? It doesn't help. It hurts. So that's the second strategy. Third strategy is mindfulness. Actually, the third strategy says just flat out ignore those thoughts. It's just a mind burp. Self-judgment especially is a mind burp, a mind fart. Let's get real. What do our self-judging thoughts have to do with reality? I'm bad? What does that even mean? Right? It just doesn't have to it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's just a deep emotional habit. That's like, what does that have to do with anything? So ignore it. And the fourth Buddha says, relax the thought fabrication. It really means just be mindful. You know, show up for the experience you're having. If you stay mindful with it over time, it kind of burns out its energy. And you move to something new. So you've tried all that, and you've tried all that a lot, and there's just something that's just driving you crazy. This can happen on retreat. I mean, it can happen just, you know, in your regular sitting practice. So sometimes we could just call it like the screw it mantra. Just screw this. enough is enough. No. We want to give our mind a firm no. The motivation here is important. It's not self-judgment. This is actually going against self-judgment, usually. That's the thing we're sick of. We're just saying firmly no. We're not saying, you're so bad, self-judgment. God, when are you ever going to stop judging me? That's self-judgment, right? That's the inner critic, right? We're not doing that. We're just saying no. No. Enough. Stop. Right? No judgment in it. And by the way, the inner critic, you know, has a role to play. It can be very good at discriminating things and seeing clearly, but then it adds this good and bad. So we can just get rid of the good and bad, and then it's like, oh, clear seeing. So the inner critic has a role. We're not trying to get rid of it. So we want to stay mindful as we do this, and we're only doing this just to access a kind of strength. And we'll let go of the anger and the object as soon as we kind of feel like stronger. So we'll do a little experiential. So let's just an experiment, see what happens. So again, this will be short, 5 minutes or so. Just set the intention, you're going to try a little experiment, but you're only going to take it up if you can feel that it's actually an act of self-care to do so. Don't do it if it doesn't feel right to you. Just feel your body. Feel the aliveness of sensation. Buzz, pulse, throb, tingle. We're just going to try an experiment. Bring to mind something that's a frequent criticism of yourself. Some way in which you're naggy, mean with yourself, harsh. And now contemplate what this frequent near in your mind, this negativity, contemplate the ease, the self-love that being critical robs you of. It messes with your well-being. And when you're feeling bad about yourself, you're less available to others. And you can't fake this too much, but it might be available to you. Can you actually drum up anger at the fact of the inner critic robbing you of your well-being? Anger at the hurt. Anger at how frequent the critic is hard on us. Give yourself permission to be pissed off. And as the Buddha says, crush mind with mind. Just say no. Now, I'm going to read you the Buddha's words. If this inner critic persists and drives you crazy, the Buddha said you should beat down, constrain, and crush your mind. As a man with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he is beating down, constraining, and crushing his mind with his mind. Those unskillful thoughts of the inner critic. So this is the Buddha's advice. Just experiment and try it. Just overpower the inner critic with your anger and with a firm, clear no. Now see if you can let go of the contempt. See if it's possible just to feel the raw energy of anger. Without doing this out loud, you can do it in your imagination. Imagine a growl emanating from deep down in your belly, between your navel and your spine, or even lower. Imagine a growl coming from there. And then letting go. And just feeling your body. If there is a feeling of strength, notice what it's like. If there's not, notice what that's like. And let's just finish. We're thinking a kind, sweet, loving thought about ourselves, so we remember this is in service of self-love. What do you appreciate about yourself? Something simple. How to go? That little experiment. Some nods.
It's vibrant.
Vibrant. Is that how you feel right now?
Yeah, and it and the experience. So some, these words, integrity and truth. Yeah, that's nice.
Great, vibrant, integrity, truth.
Yeah.
What else?
I'm stronger than I give myself credit for.
Ah. Nice. What's the feeling of strength? Anyone want to just say how strength feels in the body?
Yeah, my heart feels bigger and my chest feels more open.
Nice. Heart is bigger and more open.
Expansive.
Any concern that this is, you know, goes it going into aggression or violence or something? Is it clear? that this isn't that. Cool.
Cool. So even the no became a yes.
Awesome. Did everyone hear? The no became a yes. Mm-hmm. This is the no. We're protecting. We're pushing to create boundary. So push is actually a developmental movement, right? That's very important. But so is yield. Yield is a very important. So we say no with a push to yield to the yes inside. Because a no that's not connected to a yes is just anger. It's not strength. Remember, strength is aligned with what really matters to us, with our purpose. So great, I'm glad you said that. I just think, so, you know, the last thing is to just talk about how then strength translates into action, you know, with integrity, with vitality. You know, we have the strength to actually be truthful, to take action when it's scary to take action. So strength plays into courage. If we just say very simply, courage is feeling the fear but doing it anyway. If you're not scared, it isn't courage, right? Courage is action. Then it's just, you just do it. Someone else might think you're brave, but you don't think it, right? So what courage or bravery is a personal thing. We know when we're brave because we know when we're scared and we do it anyway. So nobody can tell you that was brave because they don't really know. So it takes courage, doesn't it, just to live? I mean, who cares about all these, you know, movies, Lord of the Rings, and people in armor with on their steeds, you know, just galloping in the battle. I mean, every day takes a warrior kind of courage, doesn't it? You know, life is constantly bombarding us, isn't it? With chaos, with difficulty, with complexity, interpersonally, especially. So we need courage, and courage comes from this strength. And remember, strength is all about no shame. And really, shame comes first from comparing often, right? So one of the biggest things we can learn from meditation is to wake up to when we're comparing and then just say, oh, comparing. How is comparing useful? The only time comparing is helpful is when it helps you know what you want. But to measure yourself against others, that's only going to defeat us or make us superior and be really egoic, right? To compare, if it tells you something you want, then it's useful. And then that's about something you want. But otherwise, it weakens us. So we need to drop the comparing. And we will do it. So don't worry about doing it. But when you wake up to it, then you cannot give it stock. And we talked a lot in working with fear and sort of how to act when you're scared. But mindfulness is, of course, the key. You know, if you can be mindful of the fear. I kind of like the idea. When I act out of fear, meaning when I'm being courageous, I really like the phrase, this is going to be interesting. Because that is you being mindful. And it's like, okay, I'm going to act, and I'm scared, but I'm going to show up for what it's like. And then the result of your action is not your fault. If you feel that you have acted, you know, with in your own integrity, I mean, if you've been really unskillful, then you can blame yourself. But if we can act very skillfully, communicate very clearly and skillfully, and get abuse coming back at us. Have you ever had that experience? That's not your fault. That's not yours. That's just something about the other person. So I'll just stop.